Hey, you're listening to the Dangerous Jobs Podcast. My name is Apollonia Rockwell, and I'll be your host as we dive deep into conversations with business owners, safety experts, and boots on the ground from hazardous work sites around the country to learn what it really takes to make safety achievable in dangerous industries. On this show, we love talking about company culture, total worker safety, and greatness in the workplace. Let's dive in. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Dangerous Jobs Podcast. I'm your host, Apollonia Rockwell, and I'm super excited to chat with another gal who's telling her off air to get to nerd out with safety. This is, oh my gosh, my favorite thing, but Allison Short, guys, she's incredible. Female dominating in this industry, which is so inspiring. You're so young. I'm like so excited just to dive into your story, Allison. And you're just super inspiring. Your story, we've done our research, my homework on you. And Allison is a CSP and CIT. She's a safety management consultant. She is a safety educator and a co-host of the Illusion of Safety podcast. So I'm just super grateful that you're here. How are you doing today?
Doing great. Thanks for having me on the show. It's really fun.
Oh my goodness. Well, I know you have your own podcast and you are dominating in this space. So what I wanted to start right off the bat is I'm dying to hear what I know a little bit about your story from doing my research, but for the listeners, like for the guests, can you tell people how in the world? I feel like people would look at you like, who's this young girl? Like, how did she get into safety? What is her story? And so I know you've been asked that probably a million times, but for the audience, how in the world did you get into safety?
Yeah, that's fair. No, I'm always happy to share because I think we all have this kind of odd way of getting into safety. There's people now that are younger than me that are going to school for this. And I'm always like, how did you do that? How did you know this was a degree? I did not. I took a very circuitous route to end up in safety. I actually have a bachelor's of fine arts in dance. So that's my real background is in dance education.
That's so cool.
So I really thought I was going to change the face of art education. And that was how I saw my whole career going. And I did student teaching and wanted to run screaming.
It was not the best. Like, wait a minute.
It's like, so I had my whole life planned out and then did that and thought, oh, now what? I started working for a organization, just kind of a mom and pop at the time, in my hometown because I needed a job and was doing data entry. And my first mentor in safety said, hey, like, why don't you come work in safety? See if you like it. And that kicked off what's now turned into an almost 10-year career in this industry. And I've fallen in love with it. It's just such an interesting, fun career. You get to do something different every single day. And you're always learning. Like I've continued to learn and continue, like, education is still really important to me. So I think some of those skills and some of that performance and teaching and education, like, that's all still safety. It's just, I'm teaching grown men instead of little girls in tutus. So
absolutely. And you know what's funny about that too is like how it's broken down, like how the subject is broken down probably is the same as how you, like, it's as simple, like, safety. I'm sure you've seen this, like, making the connection of what you just said, like, safety isn't meant to be taught above people's heads with concepts and strategy. And you know what's so interesting how you said that is, like, it really is, like, when you can make any topic and subject as easy to understand as you're explaining it to a toddler, like, that is when you know it's going to stick. I mean, imagine somebody talking to you and it's all strategy, it's all craziness. Sure, you're listening, but like, what's rememberable? And so that's why I'm so excited to talk to you too, because not only are you killing it in this space, you've been doing this, you know, 10 plus years, but it's like, you have experience in the education piece. And that's what's really exciting to me is, your master in the consulting side, which we'll get into all that. I love the safety consulting side, helping build programs and strategy, helping build strategy for companies, moving the needle for a culture of safety with an organization. But tell me like about the training piece. You've seen this world, you've seen this safety world evolve over the last 10 years. Right. What was it like training? Like what were, when you were doing that job that you just explained, what did the safety training look like at that job? And like, what have you seen it evolve into today?
Sure. Yeah. Good question. So I, at the time it was kind of these on-site toolbox type talk type deals, where a lot of people are looking at me like, who are you to tell me how to do this? And so there's a lot of having to build trust really quickly, having to continue to show up on a routine basis so that they believe that you actually care about their safety and you're not just like the woman with the clipboard checking off a list. So really kind of in person, some paper tools, we did, you know, death by PowerPoint. That's kind of how training happened. And now there's a lot more cool stuff out there. Like Ally Safety is killing the game with
all of her, right?
Like Rachel's videos are amazing because she, we had a whole conversation about safety topics are exciting. Like why are we doing boring safety training? Because we get to talk about really cool, interesting, scientific, exciting stuff.
Real
why
world.
Is our training? Yeah. Why is our training so terrible? So we have a lot of cool online resources now. I think the pandemic really forced a lot of people to kind of shift their mindset on accepting a virtual training.
I agree with you.
I'm always still an advocate for in-person. Like I think that that's the best version, but sometimes that's not possible. If you have technicians or employees across 50 states and internationally, how do you train those people? You can't be on site every single day with every part of your team. So I think using as much of that personal interactive skill as you can digitally is something that I think is the future of training. And I always encourage all my, who I'm consulting with now, I'm talking to them about like, put your own employees in a video. I'm encouraging them to like take some ownership of the training because you, you can listen to me, like whatever, I'm your third party consultant that comes in and talks to you, but you can get so much more buy-in when you have your own people talking or taking that ownership of safety. And then you're creating a culture on top of just training them too.
Allison, you're genius. I seriously, I'm not kidding. I think that I can relate a lot in your story with like being a girl on a job site 10 years ago. That was me 10 years ago. Like you mentioned, people are questioning like, who are you and why do you think you could tell me anything like about safety? And so having to build trust and to continuously show up to build those relationships quickly is really important. But I love what you just said. And I love tangible advice. Like when I'm listening to a podcast, I love when you can like take something away that day. And safety professionals, managers, GMs that are have all the /HR/safety, you know, the guy. So whoever's listening that has safety under their title, and you just like re-listen to what Allison just said. If you can bring safety to the table for your company, making some videos of like repetitive, you know, maybe donning, doffing, fall protection, just like basic stuff that can be repeatable, have your employees in there. And that doesn't replace a safety person. That doesn't replace a safety consultant. We're just saying bring the team along with the journey and you watch the buy-in skyrocket. And so tell me this, this is so interesting too, to pick your brain, Allison, because you are third party. Okay. So riddle me this, like, I'd love to know, like, what do you do with the company that they're telling you, Allison, our TRIR is through the roof these last 3 years. We're not able to work for XYZ customer. I need you to come in, you know, solve the day and change our safety culture. Right. Like, what goes through your mind when you're hearing something as extreme as I know you still get those calls today.
Yeah.
Like, what goes through your mind and what do you do about something like that?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. So I'm often either doing prospective work, like trying to see if we're going to get to work with this company to be a part of our organization, or we're insuring them. So I'm already getting to work with them. Mm-hmm. And so the setup is all kind of the same. I come in and I go, okay, how invested are you in partnership? How invested are you in wanting to make safety significant and actually make some action steps and changes in your organization? Every once in a while, we do have folks that are like, sounds great, Allison, but we're not doing that. We don't have the buy-in. We at this location feel good, but our leadership is not invested and they're not going to send money towards this.
Yes.
And so then you go, okay, where are they spending the money? What are the parts of the organization that they are investing in? Is it only production? Is it quality? A lot of these manufacturing companies have really incredibly robust quality programs and production requirements. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, we don't have time for safety. So then you can make the argument that safety is inherent to that. You know, we have this triangle of safety and quality and production. Mm-hmm. They're all connected. Your people are all a part of that organization. And so can you build in safety to these quality processes that are already happening? Wow. You don't have to create a whole additional program. Just add those components into steps or pieces that are already happening. Procurement, is safety at the table? Are you having those conversations up front so that we aren't losing money on the back end when we go, oh, wait, all these gloves that we just spent $3,000 on to outfit our whole company aren't the right ones. Mm-hmm. Now we're able to kind of look at that from a lean perspective.
Yes.
That maybe the organization understands that vocabulary a little bit better than TRIR and OSHA and things that make them roll their eyes. So you kind of have to figure out where are they invested as maybe a back door to get them to understand that safety is going to be significant and help them and cut costs and make their work more effective.
That makes so many safety professionals are nodding their head like I am, because everything you're saying is just resonating so deeply with every safety professional listening. I mean, what you're saying makes so much sense, and what an interesting question to ask yourself is, like, if you're a safety professional listening and it's like, man, yeah, I do feel like I'm not getting the buy-in, or I'm stuck at taking safety to the next level here. I feel like they're not invested. I love that question that you just asked yourself. Yeah. Ask yourself, where is the money being spent? And maybe start there. Like, that makes so much sense. You're so smart. I love that. And so tell me about, I think a lot of people are listening, and obviously, if they're listening to a safety podcast, Dangerous Jobs podcast, they obviously want to learn and grow. They obviously are wanting to take, you know, whether it's their in-house or maybe they're a consultant, but whatever company they're working with, they're trying to go to the next level, right? So that's like the listener. And so what, describe to us, you don't have to use any names involved, but I'd love to know, like, what is your dream client look like? And the reason I ask is because sometimes I feel like, and I'm sure you can relate to this, it's like, we're all chasing this thing, right? Like, this intangible safety program is a concept that we're trying to constantly communicate it to management. We're trying to communicate it to the team. Boots on the ground is a safety program, right? This theoretical safety program. And I think listeners were able to get to a destination if that destination is clearly described. Mm-hmm. And for somebody as seasoned as you, you've seen the worst of the worst. You've seen the clients that you've turned away. You've worked with amazing clients, and hopefully not catastrophes that have happened to them, but I know that you've seen it all. So can you help describe, like, what is that dream client that you love working with? And what are some of those things that they're doing that maybe some listeners can be like, oh man, I can, like, strive for that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a fun question. I love to work with the organizations that are highly adaptable, that like they'll kind of like they'll departments are all talking to each other. Yeah, there's okay. not any, like I have worked in so many siloed organizations. And so when you can get multiple people at the table from multiple departments and sides of the business, mm-hmm. and they're providing ideas back and forth with one another, and those are accepted openly. And maybe that doesn't mean there's no conflict. That doesn't mean there's no kind of discussion, that there's respect in the organization and there's like kind of this capacity for creativity. Mm-hmm. I love organizations that are willing to take some risks. It's so weird to say as a safety professional, right? But like,
but tell me more about that. Yeah.
I appreciate people that were realistic about like, what are the exposures? What are people doing every day? What things can we adjust and correct and protect? Mm-hmm. And what things are just way outside our budget or that we're not going to be able to do. And so now we've got to be creative, mm-hmm. and change the way we're working as an organization. Mm-hmm. And so I think some of that willingness to maybe move outside the lines of like, this is strictly the rules, this is strictly safety. Yes. And kind of think, how can we actually make this work? And it may mm-hmm. be totally different. You know, I just worked with the organization where after we had some conversations that really they were leading and I was just asking questions, they completely reorganized their entire manufacturing floor. It as a part of lean manufacturing, like it's all kind of integrated with safety as well. But they just totally were like, oh yeah, so it's going to look completely different, Allison. So we changed everything. And I was like, this is wild, you know, but that willingness to say, let's change it and see if it works, like that really doing that plan, do, check, and then go back and act on and make those changes if you realize something isn't functional. So I think that's not really a specific answer, but that willingness to just like take a shot and see if it works for the folks that are actually in your company, and communicating like, my goodness, are we talking to the people doing the work? Because if we're not doing that, we're missing out on everything. So
that would
be my kind of two biggies.
I love that. And you did answer the question beautifully. I mean, what I heard you say was, you have to listen, you have to understand listeners, like the dream client for Allison, like she works with, she helps people build their safety programs. And so what I mean by dream client for her is somebody that, hey, this company is moving the needle. Like they're successful. They're not only growing as a business, but their culture is also growing alongside that. And so she just described the characteristics that a company needs, culture wise. It was really what I heard you say. I mean, you talked immediately. You didn't go into the bells and whistles. Hey, they had this equipment, they had this safety program, they had this policy. Immediately you went in, you basically said leadership, if I heard you right, it was leadership was willing to change. Right. Like they were not stuck in their ways. And so if you could find a company to work for, or if you're a consultant, whatever it is, you need to really like think of and really assess how willingness, like what is the willingness that leadership, the owners of the company, how willing, how open-minded can they be? And maybe to the degree that they are is to the degree of how successful the culture can be is really, I feel like that's what I heard you say. Am I right about that?
100%. Yeah.
Wow.
Like I think that, so I'm studying industrial and organizational psychology right now, about to graduate.
Love.
It's so exciting.
what are you learning with that? Yeah.
It's
fascinating.
So much of it is kind of, is team management, is organizational culture, is personnel selection. So much of how I've kind of already thought about safety is what led me into this field of study. And now is just like, okay, there's some research, there's some science behind why this works well.
Why?
And so having leaders, like your leaders, your frontline supervisor, the person that you interact with most mm-hmm. often as an employee mm-hmm. has such a significant impact on you as a worker and wow. the decisions that you make mm-hmm. and your safety within mm-hmm. that organization. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's why I'm so passionate about communicating that to the people that I work with and wanting that buy-in from yeah. those leaders, because they're the ones that can make a change. I can right. show up as a person that's here for a day or 3 days, and I can do a training and it can go super well. And mm-hmm. then I walk out that door. And maybe it makes a difference, but maybe
in
not.
The moment.
You're right, mm-hmm. in the moment. Mm-hmm. So what are those leaders doing to kind of continue that culture yes. change and that accountability? Mm-hmm. Accountability is such a huge part of safety. If we don't have accountability,
God. You're right.
Then our policies don't mean anything. Our PPE doesn't mean anything. Like mm-hmm. everything we're doing doesn't really matter if folks are not held accountable. And that's not just the people below us. Like, you have to have accountability in both directions.
Can you tell me a little bit more, the audience, a little bit more of what that means and what that looks like? So immediately when I hear you say, man, and I couldn't agree with you more about the accountability piece, because, you know, we have a safety program that 100% PPE when you're on a job site. And then Johnny, the new hire, who's maybe been there for 90 days, doesn't wear his PPE, and maybe he's written up, but the supervisor comes on site and he never wears his safety right. glasses until he's at it, like until there's an active job site. And so do you feel that a lot of the times there's always mixed signals on a job site and within organizations, and that's what could build a confusing culture is mixed signals? Yes. Or what do you think?
Yeah, no, that's it. Absolutely. I think the clarity of communication, like I'm a big mm-hmm. Brene Brown fan, clear is kind.
Me too.
Like
that is,
I say it all the time. Yeah. I'm like, clear is kind. You have to set expectations. You have to hold people accountable. So I think, yes, the PPE piece, like that's always the easiest example. Yeah. Even something as simple as like doing what you say you're going to do. So that follow up, mm-hmm. maybe you don't have the answer. You go, oh yeah, I don't know. I'll let you know.
Yeah.
Actually following up with the person and saying, this is what I found out. Even if it's bad news, even if it's something that you don't want to have to follow back up and share, mm-hmm. doing something as simple as that builds that accountability and that trust. And so I think that's kind of that top down and bottom up is that talking yep. with one another. The PPE piece is an excellent example as well. Mm-hmm. And I think too that, again, having policies that make sense, you know, having procedures that are functional, that are, you know, that maybe your company that's been around for 40 years or mm-hmm. 80 years, and mm-hmm. you have these procedures and these policies that have been in place since day one. Mm-hmm. And now we just talked about from when I started to now, training's completely different. Hiring's yes. completely different. The people that we're working with are completely different. So mm-hmm. what does your workforce look like? Do you have multiple generations and we're asking them to, you know, hold certain policies and procedures in place? And maybe those work for some, but they really don't work for others. So
yeah.
again, are you willing to adjust and reflect and say, maybe some of this isn't exactly functional anymore, and make those changes and see if they work.
I like that. And going off of that, like procedure example, hey, does this still work today as it did 40 right. years ago? Maybe let's revisit that. So when you're talking about policy change, where my mind goes too is when you do snag that dream client because you feel like leadership is on board, like you've sat down, you've vetted them, and you really feel like leadership, the owner of the company, they're like, Allison, like we are open to change. Okay. Like, so that this dream customer is in front of you. Where would you normally start when it's like, hey, leadership's like, hey, I'm willing to change. We had a couple incidents last year. We had a couple of recordables last year. Help us go to the next level. How would you what are some areas that you would start at? And the reason I ask is like, so listeners are like, okay, what are some things that I could do today that I really need to look at? You know, is it new hire orientation? Is it policies? Is it training, Allison? Is it,
right.
Is it the people, like, or is it like, where would you start?
Yeah.
If you're trying to go to, if you're trying to take a company to the next level,
the good safety professional answer, it depends, right?
I agree.
How do you figure out what it is, right? So I think, you know, we're really good at going, okay, these are our incidents. This is what has happened. Let's address, you know, our high top frequency, top severity, heavy hitters. Mm-hmm. Those are good places to start. Mm-hmm. And obviously you want to address those that are continuing to be a trend on your OSHA logs or on your work comp loss runs. Like, you need to pay attention to those.
That's a great first starter. Look at
number one.
What happened?
Yes.
I love that.
Yeah. That lagging indicator, right? Like, take the lagging, take care of that. And then the leading piece of that, when you're doing those root cause analysis of why did these incidents happen? You know, really digging down to, we just keep, you know, if you're talking to your HR team or your senior leadership and they say, oh, I hear this a lot where it's like, well, we can't get any good help, or we just keep losing people. And so I hear that, but the kind of pointed question back is, well, who hired these people in the first place? And people don't want to hear that, but it's a helpful question to kind of go, what is your hiring practice? What does that look like?
Wow.
You even something as simple as like the job description? Is the job description clearly explaining what the expectations are for this role? Are we just kind of, again, using this job description that we found on the internet that's worked for the last 15 years and now the job's kind of changed? Or we installed robots and now the job is completely different and people think that they're coming in to do like an active manufacturing task, and really now they're just packaging at the end of a manufacturing robotic line. That's a really different job. And so the people that you're trying to hire for that position are probably going to be pretty different. So I think being upfront, being clear about what the job is, even about what the culture is, is really important. Like, I do not paint a picture of sunshine and rainbows and having the most safe culture ever. If when we walk in as new hires, we are seeing half the people in safety glasses, half the people not, folks have their headphones on, you know, like, it's just chaos. Already day one, I've lost some trust.
Loss of trust. I'm disgruntled. I'm mad. Right. I feel lied to.
Absolutely.
Lagging indicators, previous history, new hire or not. You didn't even say new hire orientation. You said new hire process, expectations. I love how you said that. What is the expectation in the rusty, dusty job opening that's on Indeed that no one's edited in the last couple of years? So this is really interesting. And so what if somebody's like, Allison, we're just hiring whoever can breathe, to be honest with you right now, because turnover is so crazy. I'm sure you get this every day. Turnover is out of control. Nobody wants to work. No one's good where we're from, because everybody says that no matter where they're from. Right.
Yes, that's true.
Mm-hmm. And so what do you say, like, to someone, to a company that they are hiring freshly green people? Are you saying the answer is be honest with that in the job description? Like, even though you're new, these are expectations.
These are the expectations, because people will, for the most part, rise to meet expectations. Like, I think sometimes we run into people who are kind of, they're used to getting that, you know, the people that were doing logging and now they want a job that gets them back at home more often.
Right.
And so they're like, I'll just go work for this manufacturing plant, whatever. And so the way we talk about the people that we hire, like, people are smart.
Yeah.
People are intelligent. And They have pretty good BS meters.
Absolutely.
And so they are aware that if they are being hired at an entry level kind of frontline position, mm-hmm. if you are the person that's their safety manager or whatever your title is, if you're the HR manager for this person and you're talking to them, like you think that they are off the street, not yeah. helpful frontline people.
Yeah.
Then they are not rising to any sort of expectation that you have of them because you have no expectations of them.
If I talk to you
mm-hmm. as an industrial athlete, as a professional, you know, yeah. like mm-hmm. if I come into work and I say, I am so glad you are here. And if it helps, if I know your name, right? Like
bonus
if I know
points,
who you
if
are,
you know my, yeah. if you try to know my name and know yeah. maybe one thing about me, yeah. maybe yeah. like, hello. Yeah.
yeah. yeah. Which it's hard. I get it. Turnover is crazy. Some of these organizations have 80% turnover for their right. frontline employees. That's really mm-hmm. hard. Mm-hmm. But I think if we can talk to people like they are human beings and yeah. that we need them to do this job. So let's set some expectations of them, of safe work, of good work. Mm-hmm. I don't say that that will solve all of your problems, but that's going to set them up in such a way that they know, oh, I'm coming to work and people expect me to do a good job. They expect me to wear my safety glasses. Mm-hmm. And that's sets the tone for the rest of what we have, for the rest of the workday.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think that that's brilliant. I think that, I asked you, hey, where are some places you would start? And this is, I was taking notes. This is yeah. very fundamental that I think a lot of people miss, right? Because if you're trying to go to the next level with safety, I feel like we can often as safety professionals, because a lot of us, we're always learning new things, right? We're looking into new policies and we've got yeah. industrial athletes now. What does that mean? Let new programs, it's easy to chase new shiny things, right? Because we're so excited. We can't right. help ourselves. We're safety right. geeks. Yeah, let's do all these new programs. But mm-hmm. I love how you said, how you would start are the basics, lagging indicators, looking at your, from the very beginning, the job posting, wherever that is, and laying out crystal clear expectations from the hiring process right. to then beyond that and setting expectations for success. And then the last thing you said that I love is very simple. It's very basic, but it's the cornerstone in building any type of culture. So I felt like I heard you say, build relationships with your team. And whether it's frontline employee and it's a pain and the what, because turnover is 80%. What I heard you say was that knowing someone's name and one freaking fact about them is going to skyrocket their engagement and just how serious that they take this organization when they see that leadership cares about them and that how far that goes. Have you seen that? Because I hear you keep referencing manufacturing yeah. and I can only imagine the mass amount of not only turnover in that industry, but how maybe easy it could be to feel lost in the weeds and, I just sure. feel like no one cares about me. When you talk to the frontline, do you often hear that within larger yeah. organizations, obviously?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, I started with all those kind of lagging and old school and unglamorous places to start, because it's those all have to be really robust and in place mm-hmm. before we can do all the cool fun stuff.
That's
where we want to get. We want to get to leading. We want to get yeah. to actually doing exciting, engaging culture pieces.
Yeah.
But we can't get there if we have no foundation to put that on top of.
So agree with you.
Mm-hmm. I think that, that's such an important piece. And then the relationship part is – like, it is so important to me. That's the, I think that's why I'm still in this industry, is because I care so much about meeting people and talking to people. And like, when I was a safety person at a company, like it was hard to leave because like, those were my people. Those are my technicians. Like I was invested in their lives. I knew about their kids, you know, like,
and they felt that from you and they could trust you.
Right.
Like I can sense that energy already from you. Like just having this conversation is like, you're a people person.
For sure.
And so like, how would that be, what would be your best advice for a safety professional? Would it probably be amp up those people skills if it's not there?
Yeah,
what would you
for
say?
Sure. I mean, I, all the time, like my buddies that I podcast with, Illusion of Safety, like Josh Rushell has this entire program that he's created called Care Tactics.
Oh,
and
wow.
Like we talk about this all the time because we are so invested in like actually caring about our work. You know, I say, you know, work as a family is kind of, as an organizational psychologist, I'm like, I don't know about that. You know, family dynamics are a whole weird thing. It's, you know, but your work is a place you're spending a lot of time. Like we have people that work 12s. Like that, I mean, that's a lot of time you're spending in an organization.
Yes.
And so we got to have some buy-in, and we got to have people that care and that are invested in us and our well-being while we're at work. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't need to know your entire life story necessarily, but I do need to know enough about you to be able to connect so that we can build some trust, so that you can come to me when you have issues with safety. I think some of my favorite conversations in safety that I've ever had are, I'm on site with a technician. We're driving. You know, I always end up in these things where it's like, oh yeah, let's go to an emergency visit that's 2 hours away, Allison, in Colorado. And you're like, sure, let's do that. That'll be great. And so we have a lot of time to build relationships and have conversations.
Yeah.
Some of my best memories come from that, because we're you know, we drive through the McDonald's and we get our really great fuel for the day, and we talk about your family. And then you're able to say, hey, like, I can tell you actually care about making a difference. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know if we can fix this, Allison, but like, these are the things that are not really working for me right now in safety. But then maybe you get a little bit of tidbit of some other stuff that's not working well. And so back to the other part of our conversation, what's that follow-up where they've said, I'm going to trust you, I'm going to give you this information. Am I taking that and saying, I'll find out, I'll see if we can make some of these safety changes, and then I'm going to communicate that back to you. Mm-hmm. And then I'm going to make sure that I'm holding our supervisors and our C-suite and our president and whoever it is accountable to going, this is something we've discovered as an issue. And I have this data, maybe it's just qualitative, right? Where I've informally interviewed all of these technicians and have found that this is a recurring issue. Mm-hmm, and I can take that to corporate leadership and say, this is something that we need to address because our most important frontline workers are struggling. Mm-hmm. And so I think that like communicating as, yes, relationships that feel good, but if you can communicate that as qualitative data that you're bringing back to your organization, they're going to hear that more willingly and maybe would be more willing to make a change based on that data you're bringing them.
Absolutely. I love how you just connected the relationship piece, because I think that maybe safety professionals, or really just anybody that could, they're hearing that, okay, Allison, I hear what you're saying. Build relationships. What's this going to do for me? How is this going to move the needle? And you connected the dots so beautifully right there. Is okay. Yeah. Build the connection and the trust so that we could get to the place, the land that all safety professionals want to get into, where we're receiving honest and brutal feedback from the front line, and then you can collect that data, and that's the valuable data that's brought up to management, the owners, what leadership, whoever, to then make a change that the front line's going to appreciate, love, and respect that you did something about that. Because you're right. There, I feel like there would be nothing worse for the front line. Imagine you, like you sharing your feedback with somebody or something you're upset about, or not upset, but you, you know, you want something to change. You, then you just confided in someone that you thought you could handle the change, and then nothing gets done from it. Probably the quickest way to lose trust within your organization. And that goes beyond safety professionals, because I know that you work with a lot of companies that they're, it's the manager, safety, everyone, you know, wearing the multiple hats. It's how can I simply build trust within this organization, get feedback on how we can do things safer, better, and make and lasting impact. Yeah. So I love how you just like really highlighted the relationship piece of it all. We'll end it with this. This is something this is really interesting. We've always heard starts at the top. Now we're talking with Allison, who's been doing this for 10 years with several different industries, several different organizations, large, small, anything in between. I want to ask you, truthfully, have you ever worked with a company that you were able to see, you were able to see their safety program go to the next level, their culture go to the next level? Have you really ever gotten to that place with ownership not being involved when the owner is, you know, doesn't really care about safety, really could care less, or really looking for something, check the box? Have you ever been able to make that a lasting impact?
Yeah, I think that, I've had some fun opportunities where we have been able to do that. I think in my first job, I probably made a lot of mistakes along the way of trying to make that happen. But I was able to kind of create some leading indicator, kind of like safety focused programs, where we, you know, made it a competition between the different regions. Wow. And, super fun. Like by the end of it, we were having the, like our corporate leader, and then we were acquired by another organization. So their large leadership was coming to our kind of end of the year celebrations for the region that's won and got all these kind of safety awards for everybody. And previously, like we had, egregious TRIRs, you know, so it was cool to see.
Yeah.
It was cool to see, see that change. And we were able to achieve SHARP certification at one of our locations. Like it was a really awesome kind of process.
That's huge.
And I will say, like, And then the company changes. Then we're acquired. Then you've got to readjust and kind of start over, which nobody wants to do. But like that's the work. I think like all the time we talk about in safety professionals, like we hear these awesome mountaintop stories, and we get, you know, get to this point and then there's a horrible accident. Or, you know, I don't even like the word accident. I know why I just said it, but like there's something happens. We have an incident and we feel like, oh, we failed. Or, you know, I have so many friends that take their like the company's safety record, like really, really personally. Like that they personally have failed. They're staying up late. They're doing work until 10:30 at night because they feel like it is their job to carry the safety. And it's not like, you can't like, you are one person. And I think it's helpful to be inspirational. It's helpful to be available to your employees. But you have to give ownership away, like give ownership, give that accountability away. So that you're not burned out as a safety professional. But then also that you have the ability to change and adjust. Like, I think that we kind of forget sometimes when we get to that mountaintop, we have this super cool moment. Like we just kind of have to keep doing the work. Like we have to keep doing the push forward and the making the adjustments. If you get a reorg, if you get acquired, if something changes, like you're going to have to start all of that trust building and that accountability and that safety culture. that starts all the way over. Even if you get a new manager, like something as simple as changing job positions, or if you're the person that changes a position, you get promoted. Yeah. Like that is that's a change. That's an organizational change that you have to accept. Like you have to state and adjust and make sure that that kind of settles out so that we can keep moving forward. Mm-hmm. But I think those changes, they're not bad. They're just changes.
Right.
So like acknowledge those, create some structures and some systems to support that change, and then keep moving forward.
I feel like what I just heard you say was safety is not a destination.
Yeah.
And it really is like a continuous journey, and to not get burnt out hearing that, because that could be kind of scary hearing something like that. I love how you said a lot of safety professionals, you know, a lot of and my friends, your friends, they're, you know, staying up worried. They couldn't even enjoy their weekend because an incident happened on Friday and it's all on their back, and they feel that. Like I've been there before. I know you've been there before.
I've been there before. Yeah.
Oh man. And it's like, gosh, this is my fault. What did I do? And I feel like you just gave such a relief for listeners, for safety professionals. I love what you said. I wrote that down, is to give ownership away. Like we have to learn that the safety program is not dependent on how smart Allison is, how smart you are as the safety pro at the company. It's not all on you. You have to share that ownership, and together you will grow and you will fail and you will grow again. Yeah. But that safety is not a destination. It's not an achievement, sharp achievement. My gosh, that's fantastic. But it's like, doesn't end there.
Right.
We don't take a step back because you just received this amazing safety recognition. So I love that. Allison, the time has flown by so fast. I don't even know how we even went over on time, but I know you're really busy. I want to honor you for your time today. Thank you so much. You're making such an incredible impact in the safety community and our safety world. And I feel like today, even though you and I know we could geek out all day about like the bells and whistles with safety programs and industrial athlete programs and all those, I love nerding out on all the extra things. But you know, I felt like today was a breath of fresh air because you and I got to talk about like the fundamentals. And I think so often we don't talk about the fundamentals anymore. Yeah. And professionals can be listening to podcasts or reading books. And it's like, what's the next thing? What's the next thing? What's the next program I can adopt? And I felt that this was such a refresher, even for myself, to just be reminded of those basics before you can take it to the next level.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you so much. It was a treat. It was really a treat to get to talk to you. So thank you so much.
Well, we're going to stay connected. And where's the best way that people can, that listeners can get connected with you? How is that on LinkedIn? Are you okay with?
Yeah.
You okay
you can find it. Yeah. Come to my house. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, come over.
Yeah. So I'm on LinkedIn. I'm Allison Short on LinkedIn.
Thank you.
I'm at Short Safety on Instagram. And then my podcast is the Illusion of Safety podcast. So check out all of that everywhere you can.
Absolutely. We'll link all of those pieces that you just mentioned. Thank you again, Allison. And we'll chat soon. Thanks.